Oh, it's probably time. I hear it. I hear the music. Oh, there's a little bit of Hawaii.
Usually it's the Caribbean one, but he's not in the studio right now.
No, he's not. He's
so he doesn't get the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, he's out there somewhere. I figured this was, you know, good commemorative to a little bit of time in Hawaii. I miss it already, but I met up with Reg Baker, who is former chair of the Nevada Society of CPAs. We had a couple good days of work out there. This is Jay Belts. It's great to have him here. IntegrityPensions.com. It's the light at the end of the tunnel is in your palm of your hand. So he gets the job done. Jay, it's so good to have you. Are you in Phoenix today?
I am, Leonard. I'm in actually Mesa, just east of Phoenix, part of the metropolitan Phoenix area.
So you've got a couple credentials at the end of your name. It's ERPA, ERPA, and QPA. What is that? You're managing consultant, founding partner of IntegrityPension.com. What does ERPA mean, and what does QPA mean?
Definitely, I'll tell you those. So we're Integrity Pension Services, just to clarify that, .com, IntegrityPension.com, both. And ERPA is actually a designation issued by the IRS. It's an enrolled retirement plan agent, and it allows me to represent retirement plans before the IRS and other governmental entities. So as you just talked about, when those plans are audited, we can take the shoes, or step into the shoes, better said, of that plan sponsor and handle the audit for them.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
Let the professionals do their job, save money in the long run.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So we've got the ERPA down. What's QPA?
QPA is a qualified plan administrator issued by ASPA, which is about a 15,000-member group. It's the largest retirement plan group in the nation. It's the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries. So they recognize me for having certain skills and talents and passing tests, and gave me the designation.
You know, I thought I'd just kind of bounce it. And there's this whole conversation today about, and I just spoke with Cheryl Garrett after she was on with Barack Obama and Elizabeth Warren about some of these fiduciary standards. And it has to do with the IRAs that are out there. I mean, this is a little bit outside of the purview of yours, but there seems to be a growing tide swell of, you know, we've got to have more fiduciary responsibility. We've got to have more accountability. Do you see... You know, or I should say, what do you see in terms of changes or evolving changes with respect to 401k plans, since there's a lot of pressure to kind of move in that direction where there's a unifying standard? In fact, Mary Jo White from the Securities Exchange Commission came out and said she wanted to have more of a unified standard rather than a bifurcated standard, where different, like a broker-dealer could have one set of rules and, you know, maybe a registered investment advisory firm would have a different set of rules. You know, they're talking about unifying these standards. So what does that mean for the 401k marketplace, do you think?
Well, you know what it means is for the layman or for the plan sponsor, it means that the financial advisor that they hire to help manage their assets needs to be a bit more transparent. And the one rule you mentioned, which really seems to be the projected strike from my viewpoint of the IRS and the administration, is really IRAs, because we have a lot of rules regarding qualified plans and how they're administered and who oversees them, but we don't have that much oversight over IRAs. So the Obama administration, through the Department of Labor, is really concerned about transparency and what advice they give and what fiduciary standards they must meet. So they propose new rules. They're actually under review right now with the OMB. If they do come out, they probably won't be effective until 2016, eventually. So it'd be a time of, you know, rebuttal and back and forth. But it's going to be good, I think, in the long run, if we do get some more transparency.
You know, it was interesting. I was talking with Cheryl Garrett about this. Again, you know, she was mentioned with Elizabeth Warren and Barack Obama a couple weeks ago, or about 3 weeks ago, in that special press conference. And it was interesting because it seemed as though you have the insurance contracts, which are an issue because those are regulated at a state level. But the second you drop an insurance contract inside of an IRA, which is regulated at the federal level, it would seem as though, and you know, I haven't heard any discussion on it, but it would seem as though that there would be additional protections for the IRA account holder. much the same way you have in a 401k plan.
That's what the concern is, I think, by the administration. So they have proposed new fiduciary rules for those financial advisors that do give investment advice to the IRA holders.
Terrific. So you've got all kinds of stuff. I've kept it a little bit sidetracked because this is hot, evolving, new,
yeah.
And it's really kind of sensational. But you wanted to focus on a couple key areas, which are really important.
Yeah, I really do. You know, next time I'm on the show and I'm there in the studio, we want to talk about that average benefits test that we just introduced last time. But since I'm out and about today, and, you know, this is a different ride of spring. You guys talked about March Madness. I'm here for spring training, actually. This is the 27th annual trip that the Las Vegas Overlords has put on as a sports enthusiast. So I'm here with a bunch of guys. Today we're watching a California matchup. We have the LA Dodgers visiting the Oakland Athletics.
Oh, that should be fun.
Oh, it's a beautiful day. 80 degrees, hot and sunny. Everyone's having a good time. Had a close call, though, a little while ago in the game. Clayton Kershaw, the pitcher for the Dodgers, took a shot off a bat right to the head. So he stayed in the game and pitched, but, you know, we couldn't really see exactly what happened. So maybe watch SportsCenter tonight if you're a Dodgers fan to make sure he's okay.
Yeah, that's a big deal. He's one of their top ace pitchers and one of the best pitchers
young
in baseball. Winner.
So,
yeah.
You know, Leonard, you mentioned you're taking time off. So I'm taking 2 days off. And hopefully that will enable us to be more focused and administer retirement plans better. In particular, the most popular plan today that you also mentioned, the Section 401k plan. And we want to talk about, we just finished a testing period. So these plans have to pass a whole host of non-discrimination testing. The biggest one is for their salary deferrals, and it's a March 15th deadline. So since about 95% plus of plans are on a calendar year basis, they just finished that testing period, and either passed or they didn't. So if you're a sponsor of a plan that did not pass your test, you have to adjust it to make sure you pass. There's a number of ways to do that, so hopefully your advisors have given you some options. If not, you know, we'd be happy to do that as well. And speaking of 401k, guys, here's today's trivia question. You know, Section 401k was added to the Internal Revenue Code in what year? How long ago was it? Any guesses?
I don't know.
I'm speechless.
Where's the Jeopardy music?
I'm going to change it to Who Reads for a Thousand, Jay? Who Reads for a Thousand? What is it?
Well, it's 1978. It was the Revenue Act of 1978, and it took IRS about 4 or 5 years to issue regulation. So not until the early 80s do we actually see plans starting to be adopted by employers because they weren't sure how to actually administer them. So that's really, you know, think about that. It's not that long ago then that we've started, you know, less than 40 years that we started 401k, and it's so popular and will soon become the plan with the most money in it.
Yeah.
Well, that's
one of these days I'm going to tell you that there's over $10 trillion in 401k plans, and we're all going to be floored by that, but it's coming in the next few years. We'll hit that mark.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Okay, now it's time for me to ask you a question, Jay.
Oh,
are great. You ready? Can you hear the music?
I have my hand on the buzzer.
Okay. Well, you know, you probably win as far as being the first one because you're the only one. You're the only contestant today. but we just want to let you know, you're saying that there's more money in 401ks. Well, what about, can you track how much money is in actual 401ks that just are single sole owners? Because that's such a great plan for the small business.
I think there is a way to track that, Jason. It would be by which return is filed. Those so-called one-person plans, which could include a spouse or a partner, say in a law partnership, we could track it that way. But as just a one person alone, I don't think the IRS can track that or anybody else can track that. But yes, we do have that capacity.
Very good, Jay. Very good. And for the bonus round, keep coming here. For the bonus round, what was the company that really kind of led to the synthesis of ERISA?
Well, it was the... are you ready?
Yes.
It was an automotive company, Leonard.
It was an automotive company, which is interesting because it has ties to Las Vegas, even, an international hotel.
Oh, I'm not sure how that ties in.
Oh, it is, because he originally bought an airline from that particular company that had diversified in South Bend, Indiana, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
So which company, which is?
I believe it's the Packard.
Studebaker. Ooh.
Studebaker.
Oh, my goodness.
Studebaker.
His Studebaker.
Oh, very close, very close.
That is. That's right up the road there.
Well, the issue there was employees were not getting their benefits from the plan. We didn't have minimum vesting standards or minimum benefit or contribution standards. So ERISA, 1974, put in a lot of minimum standards so that employees would actually receive, which was the intent, to actually receive their retirement benefits, right?
The Studebaker Auto Company pulled all the money from the pension plan except for about 10%. So all the people that worked their lifetimes in South Bend, Indiana, which is where my dad grew up, were kind of shafted by the company and ended up with no retirement benefits. So Studebaker was a real bad name growing up when I was a little kid because...
Well, and on the same vein, one of the first companies to ever adopt a retirement plan was the American Express Company.
Wow.
So another part of that additional trivia right there.
Well, you win Double Jeopardy then, and that makes you the winner for the day.
You know, what's really important on this testing, though, just to point out a few things, is that, you know, employers have to have their plan prove that's non-discriminatory. And for that purpose, the tax code says we classify all employees as either highly compensated or non-highly compensated, where highly compensated employees are those who are owners of more than 5% or whose prior compensation was above a dollar threshold, and right now that's $120,000. So those people are not allowed to have the lion's share of the plan, so to speak. In other words, the tax code gives a tax break, and Congress did, for deductions of contributions as long as they're spread out over both highly and non-highly compensated employees. So the highly compensated themselves can't be the only ones who defer their salary. So that's why originally a lot of employers gave matching contributions. Here you go. Here's an incentive, Mr. Employee. We want you to defer salary, and we will give you a financial incentive to do so. Therefore, our executives can also defer their salary. That was kind of the first blush for the first 15 years or so of 401k.
So we have
Oh,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So we've got a lot of construction companies in here that you know, have certain wage rules that they have to follow if they're working with the government.
Right.
Under Davis-Bacon, what opportunities do these construction companies have to leverage reductions in workers' compensation, Social Security taxes, employee Social Security taxes? What would you say, what's your experience in that particular area?
Well, it's really interesting for the Davis-Bacon Act people, Leonard, because they have to provide fringe benefits. And if they provide those fringe benefits as a contribution to, say, a 401k plan, they save FICA tax because the money is not going to the employee. And so it also saves the employee FICA tax. So that's a huge savings right there, right at the top, that anybody subject to Davis-Bacon seriously should consider making their fringe benefit contribution, and that's the amount per the government contract for that job that they must contribute on an hourly basis.
Now, can the employer mandate that money goes into the plan?
Yes, it can. So the employer is in control. And even further, guess what? They can use a vesting schedule. So
wow.
You know, some don't because they treat it as the employee money.
Correct.
But if they believe it's part of their own money, they can use a vesting schedule. And then if people don't fully vest, they could use the forfeitures or the non-vested to pay for plan administration or for plan fees.
So if somebody under Davis-Bacon is contributing fairly significant amounts, does that help with the testing so that the owners can participate more effectively?
It does for profit-sharing contributions, not for salary deferral. So when the employer is making the contribution, it's from them. It's not said to be from the employee. But if they also provided that incentive I mentioned, a matching contribution, then we may have more salary deferrals by those Davis-Bacon Act employees.
Okay, so let me just think this through for a second. Supposing you're running a construction company here in Las Vegas, under Davis-Bacon, you can defer, say, you know, you've got a fairly decent-sized company, you can defer $1 million just for keeping kind of rounding numbers around. We've got the Social Security taxes of about, you know, 15%. maybe they've got a workers' comp rate of 7% because it's construction, or 8% because it's construction. You're like 23% of whatever that is. So that's like $230,000 of tax savings.
Well, on the first part, the Social Security or FICA piece, we only have the employer part that the employer saves. So 7.65%, that's still $76,000.
And then workers' comp.
Or just merely funding it to the plan versus paying it directly to the employee.
Correct. But between both parties, you save a lot of money.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. But just to point out the employer savings piece, just to bifurcate that as to who really enjoys those savings.
Perfect.
Now, on the one side, though, you know, the employee does not get additional funding into Social Security. So it could have a small impact, you know, when they do actually apply for Social Security benefits. However, if they were to save their retirement monies, that is, those Davis Backing Act contributions, and use them for retirement, they'll be way ahead of the game, probably four or five fold.
Yeah, which is my hunch why the PERS system exists, because they'll be way ahead of the Social Security retirement system.
Well, that's just it. When we have one system like Social Security, there's always ways to make it better and for us to customize programs for separate employers and employees.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. Time goes by so quickly with you, Jay.
Oh, boy. Are we over?
I just blinked, and all of a sudden, here we are, like, running over time. I mean, it was 17 minutes. It's a 14-minute segment. So we have to get on to the next Mark Kantrowitz. I'm terribly sorry. I think we could have you here all day long.
I look forward to next time in studio. We will go over the fascinating average benefits test.
Oh, well, we're looking forward to it, Jay. Have a wonderful weekend there, watching the great baseball. You know, it's all over the Southwest. We've got we have the Cubs here in town because they play some of their spring training here in Las Vegas.
They do, yes.
I have a friend, a very good friend I went to college with down in Palm Desert. He's down there. I don't know who he's watching. He's watching somebody. I didn't get around to that. We were just talking business, actually. And then you're down there. Where you're at.
We're down here. We're half the team's train, and we actually see the Cubs tomorrow.
Oh, you do?
At the new Sloan Park in Mesa. It's a beautiful facility, just brand new last year. About 15,000 seats for spring training, and it's packed every game, sold out.
Well, terrific. Well, we'll be back right after the break. Thank you so much, Jay. JayBeltsIntegrityPensions.com. You don't want to miss him. He's if you have any questions on your retirement plans, you got to give him a call. I just got to make sure he's on IRPA, IntegrityPension.com, IntegrityPension.com. Jay Belts at IntegrityPension.com. Back right after the break.
Hawaii, the night is heavenly, and you are heaven to me.